You're listening to the Loopmasters Live Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Loopmasters Live Podcast. This is Will High Rankin, and this is a slightly different to normal episode as I recently went to the Brighton Music Conference to chat on a panel about LoopCloud 2.0 and all our new updates for it. If you haven't seen it already, go and check it out at loopcloud.net. It's amazing. But I also had a chance to go and have some interesting chats with some great people, people that were talking on panels, people that were just there wandering about. And I spoke to Amy Jane, who is the marketing manager for Shogun Audio, about the importance of branding in the music industry. Also spoke to Kissy Sellout, Radio 1 DJ, about DJing and touring and how he started his label as a design project. Spoke to Simon Tweddy from Trickstar Radio about starting a digital radio station from scratch and how he manages to always go above and beyond people's expectations when it comes to live events. And I spoke to Nick Sadler from MSDMT about the importance of creating an amazing product and how to get yourself out there if no one knows about you. So sit back, relax, or do whatever it is you're doing and enjoy this series of conversations from the Brighton Music Conference. Thank you very much. Kissy Sellout, how you doing, mate?
Thank you.
Very good.
Oh, this is wonderful. I'm a big fan. Thanks, mate. I'm a big fan of you, my man. This is awesome.
So you are, we're at BMC, you're going to play on the Trickstar stage, so I'm led to believe.
Yes, I am. Yes, yep. I was going to bring my Peter Andre's Greatest Hits. As usual, because I mean, really, that's my true calling. But I'm going to play some trendy bassline tunes instead, though. But
just double drop Peter Andre with, what were Anton Deck used to be called? PJ and Duncan. Imagine. Let's get ready to rumble.
Yeah. Do you remember Crisscross? They used to have their trousers on backwards. Do you remember that?
Yeah. But they had the whole clothes on backwards, didn't they? I think so. I don't think they had the shirts and the... Do they have dungarees or something?
That's a silly idea, isn't it? How'd they go to the loo?
It's a nightmare. It's like those sort of play suits that were fashionable for ladies a little while ago. That they were a terrible palaver when going to the toilet.
Yes, right, yes.
Hey, look, we digress.
Yes, absolutely.
We did a few shows together in Australia a number of years ago.
We toured Australia together.
Yeah.
Finally, you've mentioned it. I thought you forgot about that.
I didn't forget about it.
No, that was great.
And something that I was, because I'd not seen you perform before that, I was incredibly impressed at your technical ability.
Oh, that's quite nice to hear. Because obviously, you had quite a drier sense of humour back then, and I wasn't sure if.
I've softened in my old age.
Oh, yeah, it's okay. But it's
enormous technical proficiency and just a very, very good DJ performance. So obviously something that you'd worked on a lot. Like, I'm going to assume there's quite a number of hours of practice has gone into.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's... But of course I do in a funny sort of way. I think it's one of the big things I spot. See, when I'm talking to you, one of the things I really like is because I like how passionate you are about the music and stuff because I hope you back me up on this one. It's actually remarkable. I mean, people don't really get that element of it. Like they just do things because they think it's cool. Whereas like, the idea of like doing like this kind of music and stuff like as a kind of profession. I mean, that's mad. Do you know what I mean? It's not even a job of my dreams because I never thought it would happen. Do you know what I mean?
I've always like, particularly on tours like that, I've always been so overwhelmed by the fact that I've got to do something like
exactly.
They're going to invite me over to the other side of the play records that I really like.
Yeah, right.
What absolute result. But there does seem to be like, yeah, certainly an element of the scene, but they do seem to be rather doing it out of an obligation, which is like, oh, well, you're just on trains all day and it's, you know, and I've got to play at 3 a.m. It's like, well, maybe if you replace got to with I get to play.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what I always say as well. No, I completely. And I also think like you, I used to get so shy that when, I mean, as in when I was, I think I just turned 22 and I was, I think by that point I just finished university, which is how my career started because I started a record label as a university project at art school.
Really? Is that how it started?
I had a design project called Record Label and Juno Records started doing digital sales. So
yes.
So I sent an email saying that I was a record label person and I went and then I put posters up all around the university trying to get people to so I could sell their music because it wasn't supposed to be about my music at all because I got to sign the logo and the album covers and that was for my degree but then no one wanted to help me out so then I used my own music and then I pressed the Kissilla thing on record, and that's how it'll.
So it was actually started. it was a design project that
yeah,
it started.
No, it
right.
was. Yeah, it was called okay. Sand City Highs. That's where it came from.
Wow.
Which is bonkers. I mean, that's why I've always been very grateful for everything, because I never expected it in the first place. But what I'm saying is, when I, you know, but I think I just turned 22, and I DJed 20,000 people in Australia on in Sydney on main stage at Field Day, and what I'm getting at there is, like, you get up there, and you know, you're only 22 years old, like, and I had no friends that were into the same music or anything, and you and I just thought, oh no, like, I was so scared to look up.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just thought, well, keep yourself busy. That's when I started mixing really quickly. So I thought, just keep yourself busy. And then I noticed that was, it played with people's expectations, and that you can kind of manipulate that. It's a bit like conducting an audience sort of thing. But you know, it takes a lot of practice. Do you know what I mean? It takes a lot of practice.
So what did you start off on? Did you start off with vinyl or?
Of course I did. It was, I had to wash. I had to wash the cars when I was about 13. Oh, you know what's really cool? I had, because you're really into drum bass and stuff, aren't you?
This like, is true.
No, when I was about, I think when I just turned 13, and I heard DJ Hype, United Dance Designer Collection, right?
Nice.
And I thought it was the maddest thing I'd ever heard. I just didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it. I don't understand what I was listening. And I thought it was so. You couldn't tell when the tracks ended, which I think, you know, with. With like that kind of more vibrant drum and bass as well, like jungle. That's quite something, really, to not be able to tell when the tracks were finishing. And then when I saw a picture on the back and it had DJ Hype with quite like longer hair, and he was playing off those record players that my mum had, and I just thought it was the most interesting thing I'd ever seen. I thought it was so cool. Mm. So I've got a signed copy of that now. In my flat, which is quite nice. Isn't that mad? You know what I mean? You get to meet these people and stuff. It's cool.
So you've also seemed to have like. What I noticed was you were very on the case with really delving into the functions of the CDJs, like really actually using all, because there's loads of stuff on the new CDJs that like people, I probably use about 5% of the actual abilities of those bits of gear, but you were on all of these with the, do you use like the time slip thing and where you can spin it back, but it maintains the same point in the tune and like there's...
Oh, the slip, yeah. Well, no, because Yeah, I mean, that's... Oh, I did a video...
You get busy, Kissy. I've seen it.
Yeah, but, you know, I love it. And stuff, but I think it's just about... I think a lot of... I don't want to, like, I feel like I'm giving the game away or something. But, like, but you know what? Even if I do give the game away, exactly how I do prepare DJ mixes, I still think it's quite difficult. So I still think you can't necessarily just do that. And I'm quite proud. You know, that's a good way of judging whether you're doing something that's worthy, actually, is it's like, well, yeah, but is it still difficult? Even if you're doing all this pre-preparation and I'm sure you interviewed a DJ recently on your podcast where they were talking about combos and stuff.
Yep.
And I thought, oh wow, that's really cool, because that's exactly how I do it. Because like, it's I don't plan my sets, not from start to finish. But what I do is that, like, when you're playing tracks that are only like a minute long, then you have to know what the next three already are.
So
that's the way I work. So then I know to load the acapella on the fourth deck
in
advance.
A collection of routines. On the fourth deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
it's going kind of a level beyond there, isn't it?
Yeah. And then you have things like that then means that those three or four tunes that, you know, they're already the same BPM. That's not that, you know, of course they are, otherwise it would make my life a misery. But and I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, sure, I mean, I could just not have them the same BPM, but I mean, what's the point? I mean, the trick is so difficult that it doesn't, it's neither here nor there, really.
Yeah.
I remember doing a video for Pioneer DJ, and I was just using CDJs, and I didn't know how any of the stuff worked, and it got a huge reaction, and that's how I became like a brand ambassador for them. So they literally, I mean, I've had lessons on these things.
Really?
Quite, which is quite fun. And I went to Japan as well to work on the design of the 2000 Nexus 2.
Oh, really?
Yes. Which was, I mean, it was, they put up a British flag. They put up a British flag
really
when I got
to welcome
there.
You.
I couldn't believe it. It was, you know, so I remember seeing the blueprints and stuff. And I remember at that point, the technology got so complicated that it was like the Starship Enterprise. It was kind of, you could plug two computers in. Like it had so many little things on it. They'd moved the mic thing to the back of the mixer, and it was... And I think when I did a lot of consulting for them, I simply used to say, you know, I'm just thinking of it from like somebody actually has to... That's what I always... Well, basically what I'm trying to say is that like, there used to be this forum and you'd have like James Abelia and Laidback Luke and me and a few like people on it, and we'd have to write like technical feedback on it from a professional's point of view. And I'll be honest with you, like, and credit to him, but like James Abelia would actually write, you know, the resonance on one of the filters is about 2 decibels too loud. He'd write stuff like that.
Oh, right,
Whereas I would simply write, when I'm pressing these track buttons, the tracks just aren't moving. Like it's annoying. Like they're just not moving. And I would say, like, you know, I had a Kissy Club gig in Leeds the other day, and the Ethernet cable got caught in it, and it wouldn't come out. And so that's the sort of stuff I'd say. I mean, even though it sounds simple, but the point was that there was a moment at which you're like, it's all right. It's all very well having this stuff, but it has to be kind of ergonomic, doesn't it? It has to be easy to use.
I feel like there was a version of the 2000s whereby you could accidentally put the Ethernet cable in upside down, it would just completely mash the whole socket. And they
quite possibly.
Yeah, and I remember there was a whole spate of playing in clubs where I'd luckily brought 2, basically, copies of my USBs.
Only two?
Well,
do you know yeah, I turned up with six.
I only turn up with one these days.
Yeah, but do you know I turn up with 6 SD cards? 6. I have 6. And when I used to play CDs, I used to have 5 copies of every CD. And
I lived dangerously.
The reason why was because you never knew which ones were scratched. You never knew which ones were scratched. And in back playing CDs as well, the CD, it would just stop. That's when they built in the active loop in the CDJs.
Well, the 1000s, though, they would play a ham sandwich if you put it in there. Like, they would literally play the most scratched CDs I've ever seen. But then when it jumped onto the 2000, the emphasis was on the USB and the SD card. Now, it feels like the element that actually played the CDs, they'd maybe, like, reined it in a little bit to save some money. I don't know, but they would definitely play, like, only less scratch CDs, that, and you could get away with playing anything in the 1000s.
Well, you know, yes, of course, it's very technical, this chat, isn't it? But you know what's funny, though, is that I remember, it relates to what you're saying, I remember saying to them that there's this odd thing that happens with like the CDJ 1000. If you actually just put it on tempo, you know, master tempo, you just press the button, so it has to play at the normal speed, and you play a tune, it doesn't play at the same speed as it does when you play it off your computer or something. And I said, I don't quite understand what the reason is. And it was because of the milliseconds. It was due to the amount of samples per second.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And as the CDJ's 2000s got more complicated, they doubled it. So it was much higher fidelity. So it meant that the time stretching was higher quality and stuff. So it might be why CDs weren't working. Well, you know, of all the, I've got Peter Andre jokes to tell. Do you know what I mean? I can't believe we're talking about all this technical stuff. Do you know what I mean?
So, hey, what did you drink before a DJ, sir? What's going on now? What you were telling me about some collabs that you've done recently.
I've had a bit of a, I don't know, like, I've basically relaunched my entire career, really, I think. I kind of wish I'd done it about a year earlier, I think, maybe. But, like, it's funny because, you know, another enjoyable thing about talking to a producer like you is that, like, you've seen things come and go and change. And one of the things I really like about your music is that, but you're the talent. And so, actually, if you're making a house tune or if you're making a drum bass tune or a dubstep tune, it's your talent I'm interested in. And I'd hope that thought happens in a lot of records I make. But I think, I started a new record label called Stepper Man. And then I don't know, I just had an idea for tunes, really. I started making tunes on the name KSO, and I've got a new album coming out now. So that's got, which has got DJ Q, Pav, Sam Supplier, Dread MC, Tengu, J Kia, J69, talk amongst yourselves.
Solid lineup so far.
It's about 15 collaborators on it.
Will you keep it down over there?
That is literally Cy Twiddy. Yeah. A lot of you won't know who that is, but he's a real person. So I'm really excited about it. It's called Star from the West Side, and it's a bassline album. It's inspired by Aphrodite and Mickey Finn Records. And also, whilst they call me the baddest rapper, do you know what I mean?
That's what I've heard,
particularly at Christmas.
Yeah.
I told you I'm a bit funnier these days. It's got a West Coast hip-hop element in it as well. It's got a G-funk kind of thing going on it as well.
Why not?
Because I love that half-time thing of early Jungle Records and Urban Takeover Records, where you have the halftime, then it doubles the speed. And, you know, because bassline is like kind of 132 BPM up, really, to kind of 140, it works really well. So it's I've got a new lease of life, and it's been great, really. I'm really excited about it.
Banging. Cheers, mate. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what goes on up there, even though they have turned the bass bins off. I'm very sorry
to... Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
You said you weren't going to say that.
No. Yeah, Side 20's ragged the system too hard.
Yes, right.
Although I have noticed on the computer screen over there the button that will turn them back on. So
I
know you're playing towards
it's
the end.
It's very difficult because there's so many high ranking fans just here. And there's a lot of Kiss Sellout fans over here.
Why are all my fans the men in the very ill-fitting black t-shirts? Your fans are better looking.
You funny? I was about to make a joke about my ones first. Yes. Keen.
Band Keen. There you go.
So how many of these videos have you done?
This is for the Loot Masters podcast.
Loot Masters, yes. I've got a sample pack on Loot Masters. You go and check it out. I'm actually quite proud of that sample pack, I must be
it's
honest.
It's good. I liked it. I like the demo.
Because you do a lot of sample packs. And yeah. You know, one of the things I found most useful about it was I got asked to do these like kind of synth print things where you don't just submit like the stem of the melody. I actually had to bounce out like something like six notes along the scale of each synth. And I'll be honest with you, mate, I started using it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that to sell my own thing, but I got a really good kind of re-space kind of preset, and I had some good mastering plugins on the side of it. And I used to load them every time I used it. So I actually load them. But now I actually use my own sample and put it like in it. I think it's quite.
There you go. I think if you're particularly when you're making a pack, if you aim to make something that you really want to use, you're
going
to make something that people are actually.
But I like that
about
what Loot Masters are doing though, because they're actually useful. You know, I think it's because it's, you know, it's funny like when you got some sound packs you hear, like it's remarkable how many times it's the same thing. And I think now I'm in kind of the bassline scene these days. I find it quite funny how I mean, I've made all types. You know, my second album's made with classical instruments. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm familiar with all kinds of different production techniques. But it's funny how secretive it all is about the bassline synths. It's very secretive. Even more secretive than drum and bass is. I mean, it really is. You can't. And because they're so bespoke as well, you can't even do that thing when, you know, you might hear a really cool drum and bass record and you can actually just take it. Just, you know, there's a bit where there's no beats. You just take it. Do you know what I mean? And you just take
I'll just have that wrist bass.
You can't really do that with bassline. So I think it's quite cool. And yeah, I think it's cool.
Dude, pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Over and out.